Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Business Podcast, show number 18.
It's funny when you set a vision for yourself and you have just complete clarity on where you're going. It's amazing the speed at which you'll get there, faster than you ever thought. Like, I wanted 1,000 units, $50 million of real estate in 3 years. If I really want it, I'll accomplish it this year. I mean, I'm halfway through the year now and I'm halfway to the goal. Like, I could probably accomplish it by the end of the year.
Welcome to a real world MBA from the School of Hard Knocks, where entrepreneurs reveal what it really takes to make it. Whether you're already in business or you're on your way there, this show is for you. This is Bigger Pockets Business.
How's it going, everybody? I am your co-host for the Bigger Pockets Business Podcast, Jay Scott, and I am here today with Carol Scott, my other co-host. How you doing today, Carol Scott?
So great. Seriously, honey, life is good, right? Life is just good. All this amazing transition stuff is good stuff.
Everything is good. We are settled into Florida in our new house. The kids are back in school. Yay
for
us.
They're back at school and they love it. So yay for them too. It's just good all the way around. And that is like the biggest sigh of relief ever. That is huge.
It's so hard having your kids start a new school. And we've been very fortunate that our kids found a great school. They're very happy there. They're making new friends. They love their teachers. But we are in a slight dilemma ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, a horrible dilemma because our life's just so hard. But realistically, here's the deal. We've got a lot of great things going on, right? We have our real estate business. We have our books, our education, our podcast. But now we are wanting, now that I have some time freed up and the transition is ready, what do we want, honey?
We want to figure out what the next big thing for
us
is going to be.
We want our own next big thing. So that is a first world problem for sure. But we are happy that we have this financial freedom and we have such problems to face. But now we are trying to figure out what it is that will be our next big thing together.
And here's the funny thing. So Carol and I were talking this morning, literally just this morning, about what that next big business thing is going to be for us and our family. And then we jumped on the podcast with our guest today, and he talked about basically how you figure out what that next big thing for you is, and not just what that next big thing is, but how you hold yourself accountable, how you create goals and how you meet those goals to ensure that you actually carry out that big thing. Now, for any of you that listen to the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast or are just familiar with Bigger Pockets, you probably know our next guest. His name is Brandon Turner. The one and only. He is the VP of growth at Bigger Pockets. He is a real estate investor. He's an entrepreneur. He is the co-host of the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast. And today he's going to tell us all about how you can define your next big goals and how you can hold yourself accountable for achieving them. And he has some crazy massive goals going on, and he's getting close to achieving those. And he'll tell us all about it today. So with that in mind, before we jump into our show, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor. Real estate investing is known for a lot of things, mainly making a very select group of people a whole lot of money. But being an online cutting edge experience is usually not one of those hallmarks. Well, thanks to Fundrise, that's no longer the case. Fundrise is the future of real estate investing. Their revolutionary model is transforming the industry thanks to their software, which cuts out the costly middlemen and removes old market inefficiencies. Fundrise delivers the kind of investing power you typically only see at the big institutions and can now bring real estate's unique potential for long-term growth and cash flow to individual investors like us. Getting started is simple and usually takes less than 5 minutes. When you invest with Fundrise, you'll be instantly diversified across dozens of real estate projects, each one carefully vetted and actively managed by Fundrise's team of real estate professionals. Then you can use their intuitive investor dashboard and real-time reporting system to monitor the progress of each property in your portfolio. Now that's the future of real estate investing. So, are you ready to get started? Then visit fundrise.com/BP business. That's FUNDRISE.com fundrise.com/BPBusiness. And you'll get the first 3 months of fees waived. Again, that's fundrise.com/BPBusiness. Thank you so much from our sponsor. Now, without any further ado, let's hear from the man, the myth, the legend, the beard, Mr. Brandon Turner. And welcome to the show, Brandon Turner. How are you doing today, Brandon?
Man, I'm so good to be here. Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Carol. This is an honor. Ever since episode one, I've been waiting for that day when you invite me on the business show. So I'm pumped. This is great.
We're so glad to have you. Did you get any surfing in today or lately, or what's going on in your world?
Not today. I did go yesterday, and the waves were amazing. I was not amazing, but the waves were amazing. And I like floundered around for like 2 hours. It was great. It was awesome.
Love it.
Yeah. Okay, Brandon, I know that a lot of people who are listening to this already have a pretty good idea of who you are, but some of our listeners may not be familiar with the great Brandon Turner. So some people know you as a real estate investor. Some know you as an entrepreneur. Some know you as the face of Bigger Pockets. Some know you as that really cool guy with the cool beard living in Hawaii, living the dream with his family. Can you take us back and just give us a brief synopsis of what you've done, where you've come from, what you're currently doing?
Sure. Wow, that's quite the intro. I do all those things. I don't know if cool beard's the right way. I think homeless looking beard is probably the better way to describe it.
But there's a fine line.
There's a fine line. I'm on the other side of that line. But yeah, I got into real estate early on when I was 21. Before that, my very first business idea, I don't think I've ever even told you guys this. My first business idea before, like when I realized I might be an entrepreneur some days, because I hated the fact that I had to take my car in when I was like 19. I had to take my car in to get the oil changed. And I hated that entire process. I was like, why doesn't somebody just come to my house and change my oil for me? I was like, people do it at houses. So why isn't that like a thing? So I started like this business plan. I drew up a logo and all this stuff for a mobile oil change business. And that's all I ever did with it. Because
when you were 19?
That was when I was 19. Yeah. And I was I was like, I'm going to make an oil change business that goes to people's houses and changes their oil for them. And I'm like, I would pay for that service because I hate going somewhere. And I had done my own oil myself for, all through high school. And then I went to an apartment complex where I couldn't actually change it in my apartment complex. So anyway, that was kind of what sparked the idea. And I never did anything with it, which obviously speaks to the lesson of like ideas are a dime a dozen. It's what you do with them that matters. So I never did anything with it. Years later, I found out somebody actually did this. I don't know if they're successful, but I heard the mobile oil change thing was a thing. Anyway, so at the time I was like, that was the first time I had ever thought I could start my own business of any kind. And that one didn't work out. Cause honestly, I think the reason why is because I wasn't passionate about it. I think that's probably pretty important. So anyway, from there, I flipped a house. I lived in it. I bought it. Didn't know what I was doing. Fixed it up. Sold it. Made like 20 grand. And I was like, I'm retired. Like, not quite. But like, I felt like I had made more money. Yeah, stupid money, right? So I made like 20 grand flipping this house that I lived in. And then I was homeless and had nowhere to move. And I used all the money for a wedding. I got married too. And that was the best way to spend that 20 grand, of course. And yeah, that moved me into, I bought a duplex. I lived in half of it and rented the other half out because I thought, well, I could live cheaper. Today we call that house hacking. I lived in half of it and I was like, I remember the day that my tenants walked over. And I feel like every business owner probably has like this moment where like they realize like they're in it. Like they're in the business now. It's like working where like my tenants walked over and they paid me $650 in cash because it was like two houses on one lot. So they walked over and handed me $650 in cash. Now today I don't take rent in cash. That's a horrible idea, but I did then. And I get this $650 and I'm holding it and I'm standing in this driveway looking at it. And I realized my entire mortgage payment was like $600. And I was like, or 620. And I was like, I'm living for free. Like this works, Like I was
huge
pumped.
Light bulb moment.
Major light bulb moment.
It totally sparked something. So is that when you really were like, let's just buy more of these? Or what happened? How'd that whole journey start?
Yeah.
Just started building more and more.
Yeah, good question. So yes, that is when it started. That's when the rental property side of things started. So I was like, wow, well, if I did this once, could I do it again and again? But I also, the flipping kind of started, obviously that first deal where I made 20 grand on a basically a live-in, fix up and sell sort of flip.
I think some people call that a house hack.
Yes. So. There are a few ways of looking at that. Yes, it's a live-in house hack where I rented the bedrooms. So I lived for free while I was there, sold it, made the 20 grand, moved on. But yeah, this whole thing is such like a, everything I teach today, I can like base back on these like first two experiences,
yeah,
right?
It all comes full circle.
It all does. Yeah. So that's when I started flipping houses, and that was 2007 when I started flipping houses. And we all remember how great the real estate market was in 2007. So I ended up with these flips that I couldn't sell because for those who don't know, it tanked and you couldn't sell anything back in 07 and 08 very well. So I ended up holding on to a few of them as rentals and just started collecting units. And I say I got into the business of collecting units is what I was trying to do. I just figured if every property I bought, every unit, so to speak, every door gave me a certain amount of money, each one was like this little oil well producing little bits of revenue. It's like having a bunch of those little candy machines, right? That you put the quarter in, like the more you have, the more you make. So every one was a little candy machine on a corner somewhere. And, it kind of worked. I ended up at 30 units when I was 27 and I was making about a little over $3,000 a month in cash flow. And I said, I'm done. I'm retired. And I quit my job. I was working at a bank, quit my job. And I sat on the couch for 6 months and did nothing. It was great.
That's awesome. And I want to talk more about real estate investing, but I know a lot of people in our audience and some who probably don't know this, but to many people, you're kind of the face of Bigger Pockets right now. And so can you tell us a little bit about how you were brought onto Bigger Pockets, how that whole thing evolved and kind of how you became synonymous with Bigger Pockets?
Yeah. So that's exactly at that point. So I'm sitting there on my couch for like 6 months doing nothing, much of anything. And I had no job at the point. And I was like, well, this is really boring. Like, what do I do with myself? So I started writing. I remember looking online. I think I even downloaded some like ebook from somebody that was like, how to make money on the internet. And I was like, that'd be fun to start an internet business. And so I started like writing a little bit. I started a blog. It was called realestateinyour20s.com. And I thought, well, maybe I'll be the guy that's in his 20s, like teaching people how to invest in real estate. And that led me to emailing Josh Dorkin because he was, you know, the godfather of real estate websites, Bigger Pockets. I emailed him and I was like, you know, hey, I'd love to write for your site. I'm a volunteer. I know you have a bunch of other volunteer writers, guys like Jay Scott and other people, you know, that are awesome. I'd love to do it. And he never responded, like just never didn't respond. And crickets. I was like, yeah, just crickets. And I was like, well, shoot, this sucks. So I just never like, anyway.
That's not the plan.
Yeah, that was the plan. So like 4 months later, what happened was Josh, like 4 months later, finally emails me back and was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't see this email. Somehow he got lost. You know, Josh is a big deal and, you know, doesn't have time to read all his emails. So he missed that one. But somehow he came across my site because I was just continuing to write and then asked me to come write for him. So I started writing for him. We became friends on Facebook. And that led to him writing this post years ago. I should go back and look actually on his Facebook. He wrote 7 years ago now. Hey, I'm thinking, it was something like, hey, I'm thinking about bringing on some help at Bigger Pockets to help edit blog posts. If you know anybody, let me know. So I responded to that thread. I said, did the person have to be in Denver or can they be anywhere? And he said, let's talk. And so that's how I got on Bigger Pockets is we started having a conversation. And yeah, I mean, I honestly started like it started like, we had a call for an hour. And the next day we talked for another hour. And like the next day we talked for like 2 hours. And then a couple of days later we talked for like 4 hours. And after like a month of that, like at some point in there, I became the very first like employee at Bigger Pockets, just editing blog posts. And that's how the very beginnings of Brandon at Bigger Pockets happened.
Let me tell you something. I remember the day he was formally quote unquote interviewing you. And we had a conversation afterwards where I don't know exactly how your conversation with Josh went down, but Josh came back to me and he was like, I think this guy wants equity in the company. I think he wants stock options in the company. I don't know what to do. Should I give him stock options in the company? And I remember for him, this was like a huge step in the evolution of his business. He finally went from like he was 6, 7, 8 years into the business. He hadn't hired any employees. He hadn't given stock options. And so basically, both for him and for you, this was kind of like something that kind of sparked what Bigger Pockets was eventually going to become.
Yeah. Well, you know, have you read the book Traction?
Yeah, absolutely.
Gene Wickman. Okay, so Traction. And then I have not read the follow-up, but Rocket Fuel. But I know like the gist. Have you read Rocket Fuel?
I have not read Rocket Fuel yet.
Okay. So my understanding is... Oh, nice. Okay. Well, my understanding is that Rocket Fuel is about this one concept in Traction, which was any good business needs to have two people. It's a visionary and a integrator, I think is the two words he uses, right?
Yep.
The visionary sets the vision on where we're going. The integrator gets the stuff done.
Yep.
And the reason, like a lot of people think that I started Bigger Pockets and I clearly didn't. Josh was there 7 years before me. And it wasn't even that I like had any, I mean, I literally didn't own a computer a year before that. Like I had no skills really at all in anything internet marketing, anything business. I'd never read a business book ever. I had no skills in any of that. What The difference was the reason we suddenly had rocket fuel is because Josh was the visionary for 7 years by himself. And he was also trying to integrate, do the integrator role. But I came in as the integrator and just started doing stuff. So he's like, we're going to write blog posts. We want to do guest posts across other websites on the internet that point back to BiggerPockets. Okay. So in the first year, I wrote 50 of them, like wow, for different sites. I'd build relationships. I'd go to conferences. I'd meet people. And I just write blog posts. Well, today, like, we've got hundreds of blog posts I've written across the entire internet that all point to BiggerPockets. And so it was, again, that Josh's vision of this is what we want to do. And that and my integrator role of being able to actually do it, that made the rocket fuel that made it launch up. So I should tell Gene, what's his name? I need to be a case study for that book.
But yeah,
that's what happened.
Well, and you mentioned, Brandon, you didn't even have a computer before any of that started. And it sounds like before all this, other than your own personal blog, you were just busy collecting units, right?
Yes.
So that really was your first foray into internet marketing.
Yeah.
So how did you make that transition as far as how did you learn how to do it? Did you just like randomly go out there and experiment, or did you have a process, or what was your thought process about how to like grow this thing and make it so huge?
Such a good question. I had read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek, which I think everybody in the world has read. And I remember thinking like, this just sounds so cool. And that's part of when I was building that Real Estate in Your 20s site, which still exists. I haven't updated it in 7 years now, but it's still there. And it's actually grown since then, which is interesting. Like there's more people on it today than were 7 years ago. So I guess that's just the longer you have a website, the more people go to it. So I had read Tim Ferriss's book. That led me to listen to a couple internet marketing podcasts. Like one of them was a Smart Passive Income podcast with Pat Flynn.
Yep.
That one was huge for me. I started reading a lot of different people. Like there's a website called Viper Chill that I read a ton of Viper Chill at the time. I read a ton of like Neil Patel. He's got a few different blogs out there. I read a lot of that. And then I am a huge reader. I read a ton of, so I started reading books on the topic, like just business books in general, but internet marketing stuff. But I'm also a big believer in like when you learn something, immediately go try it out. So I go put it on Real Estate in Your 20s, something, right? Like, oh, Pat said to do, you know, Pat Flynn said to do a free ebook. So like I give out a free ebook. And like, I literally even like copied his design because I was so bad at design. I was like, well, he already did a good design. I'm just going to do the same design. That's actually like the story of my life and everything I pretty much have ever done ever in business is what has somebody else done? I'm just going to pretty much do that. Like I never reinvent the wheel hardly ever. I always just find what has already worked for somebody else. And I just use that. For example, if I'm like the other day, I'm putting together this like executive summary for this big real estate thing I'm doing right now. And rather than like designing this 40 page PowerPoint, I go to what's it called? Graphicriver.net, I think it is. And you can buy PowerPoint presentations that have already been finished. It cost me $15 and I got like 400 slides that are already like beautifully designed. And all I have to do is like copy and paste words in there. Like that is like such an exact, like how my entire life operates and pretty much everything is find somebody else has already done it better and just copy that.
One of my favorite quotes is good artists copy, great artists steal.
Nice. That is great. That is great.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, that's how I figure things out. Just testing.
That's cool. That's good. And I think that's a good tip for our listeners too, right? Because there's so many of us who we read and we read and we research and you get that whole, you're right on the verge of doing it, but just go out there and do it for crying out loud. Just make that leap and do it. So go, Jay, what you got?
Yeah. So, okay. So that transitioned you into BiggerPockets and you could have probably sat back and focused all your time on doing marketing and growth. You're the VP of growth for BiggerPockets and you could have kind of focused on that and kind of taking a break from real estate. Sounds like you were already making a good bit of passive income. You were growing your career, but you didn't sit back. You kept plowing forward with the real estate investing. So where did your real estate investing go after you joined BiggerPockets? How did that evolve and change?
Yeah, good question. So during those, like the years, like where like I was heavily building BiggerPockets, where I was integrator, which was for the first, like call it 5 years. And we can get to why I moved out of integrator role actually in a second, but during those like first like 4 or 5 years where I was just in there doing all day long and Josh was like leading the vision and leading the team and growing it, I didn't have a ton of time. I worked a lot of hours. I mean, Josh and I in the beginning, like the first year or two, like we probably worked 100 hours a week and we had just, it was fun, you know, and then that early startup kind of feel of a company and we were just in there grinding away because we had to get it done. So I did very little real estate. Like I'd buy like 2 or 3 properties a year. I was flipping a couple. I'd buy a couple as rentals during that time. My wife at that point was able to quit her job and just manage the property. So she was taking care of that. I bought a 24 unit apartment complex in there. I ended up selling that a few years later, made some good money on that. And just kind of like slowly, like almost like maintained the real estate for a number of years. Like I went from over that course of that time, I went from that 30 units I had when I started Bigger Pockets to buying the 24 unit, and then about a 50 unit, and then a few other small ones. So I ended up with about 100 units. You know, I guess I could say as of today, I have 100 units. A month from now, I should have 600 units. And so like I've made that change recently, and we can talk about what led to that. But it was, yeah, I just slowly grew my portfolio during that time. And then at some point in there, we hired Scott Trench, who's the current CEO at Bigger Pockets. And what happened was Scott became, he's like the best integrator I know. Like the guy just gets stuff done, knows how to lead a team, knows how to get things. He was hired as an operations manager. Well, I think he was hired as financials, but he became operations and very quickly. And so he became an integrator and the team became the integrator. And so I kind of moved to more of a visionary role along with Josh, where we were doing the podcast, and eventually Josh stepped out of the podcast. And my role changed to a lot more visionary stuff. And that led me more time and more ability to jump back into real estate, which is I've done recently.
Well, let's talk about that. So you mentioned a few minutes ago that you went from 100 to 600 units. Presumably yeah. You didn't do that by buying more single family houses or duplexes or even 20 unit properties. How have you gotten from 100 to 600 units over the last couple of years?
Yeah. So the short answer is mobile home parks. And we're set to close on all of them right now. We have 8 mobile home parks under contract right now. Yeah.
Eight parks.
Yeah, 8 parks in 3 states.
Where are they?
One's in Ohio. Well, 2 are in Ohio, 3 are in North Carolina, and 3 are in Illinois.
Wow, all over the place while you're in Hawaii.
Yeah, and I can explain why. I mean, like, I don't want to go into like a super in-depth, obviously, into like why mobile home parks, I chose them. I just, like, the truth is, like 9 months ago, I got to this point where, again, Bigger Pockets is like running, and I'm still there all the time doing podcasts and videos and webinars and stuff, but like I had more time to do something, and I moved to Hawaii. So I moved to Maui last summer, and I got to that point where like I could just ease off and just relax and sit back and just coast, I guess, on my laurels. Is that the phrase? Like rest on my laurels, coast along. And I had to come to the decision of like, not so much like, do I need the real estate? Cause like I could live on the 100 units. I said, slowly pay them off. Even right now, like I could probably pay all my bills with just the income coming in on the 100 units. I could pay my bills with that. And in that 100 was a mobile home park in there, by the way. And I'll bring that back in a second, why that's important. That I came to this decision where I had to make a decision, I guess, for week after week after week on the podcast. I'm talking to these real estate investors about what they're doing, talking to business owners. And like I'm giving advice on things like, you know, to especially new investors of like, you just got to go for it and set some goals. And I found myself kind of stagnant, right? Because I didn't need it. And there's this famous quote, I'm going to butcher it, but basically like the enemy of good is like complacency, isn't that it? Or something like that? You know what I'm talking about?
The enemy of great is good. The enemy of good is, complacency. Or
yeah,
something
whatever,
like that.
Complacency. Yeah, basically like, I was fine. I was very complacent. Like I had enough money coming in. I mean, book sales have skyrocketed over the last couple of years. People seem to buy a lot of Bigger Pockets books, which has been great for you and I. Yep. And I mean, you guys. And so it's like, what do you do next? What do I do next? And I would meet with a lot of other people who had sold businesses and made millions of dollars. And they're asking the same question, what's next? And some of them for years have been asking the question, well, what do I do next? Because at the end of the day, everyone's trying to find like, what is that? Like people want to find, what's that next thing? What should I do? Whether it's, you know, hey, I own this McDonald's. Should I expand? Should I buy another location? Or should I just keep the one I have? Or should I add this new product line to my business? And people get stuck. And I know I was stuck in this, like, I don't know what the perfect thing to do is. I don't know what the right thing to do is for a long time. And then finally, I realized that that was the wrong question. Like the question is not what's the right thing there. It's not like there's a beach out there and somewhere in that beach, there's a hidden gem under the sand and I'm out there looking everywhere for it. I'm like, where is it? It's here somewhere. My purpose, my passion, it's here. I got to go find it. For me, it was like, I finally realized that like I can bury whatever I want anywhere. Like, I mean, I have the choice on that beach. Like I'm not stumbling across something that was predefined for me and I got to find out what it is. It's like, I can create it. So I shifted the question in my head from what's the right thing for me to what would be awesome. And like, what would be awesome to have? It doesn't mean it's the right thing. Cause I don't think there is a necessarily right thing. I mean, there's a lot of wrong things. Like I'm not going to go and become a meth addict or something like that, or turn into Breaking Bad style, but I don't know if there is a right thing that's like been predefined for me. So I said, what would be awesome? What would be cool? And at that time I read a book called The Vivid Vision by a guy named Cameron Harold, called Vivid Vision. It's a short little book. And in there, he makes the point that you should have a vivid vision for your life, for your business. And that's not like a vision statement. It's not like a mission statement for your work. Like, we're going to do this. What it is like a three-dimensional deep dive into the future. Like if you could get in a time machine and look 3 years, he says 3 years or 4 years in the future, what does that look like? And so I read this book on a plane. It took me an hour to read it on one plane ride from like, I think it was from like, I don't know, Omaha to Salt Lake City. And then from Salt Lake City to Maui, that entire flight back, I spent the entire thing drafting out my vivid vision.
That's
awesome. Yeah, that changed everything. Like everything in my life.
Yeah, just looking at what would make it awesome. So can you share with our audience like some of the process as you were mapping out that vivid vision of yours? Like how do you go through, how do I, here, help me, Brandon, how do I figure out not what's next for me, but what would be awesome? What are some of those steps I would take internally and to just really kind of tease out those ideas?
Yeah, a great question. So two years ago, I went to Nashville, Tennessee, and a buddy of mine there runs a music production company. He's a big songwriter, has a ton of hit singles that he's done. His name's Seth Mosley, super legit guy, and also a real estate investor. That's how we actually got to know each other. But anyway, I went to Nashville and we traded. I went and spoke at his real estate event. He had like a real estate, he has like a meetup. Called Music and Money. If you're in Nashville, you should go to it. It's great. And I went to this Music and Money and then he traded me. Hey, you come out here. I'll pay for your flight and whatever. You speak at my event. And if you come out here, we'll spend a day in my studio. And like, I was like a music guy when I was a kid. Like, I mean, I still play guitar. I live music for church and I love music and writing songs. And this was an opportunity to be in a real like Nashville studio, like, and work with somebody who's got like, who writes songs that you hear on the radio. So anyway, of course I'm like, I had already booked my flight before I got off the phone call with him. And I went to Nashville and I saw the way his team worked. Like this is like, I mean, I got to do music and it was like the greatest day of my life. And I wrote this song for my daughter, Rosie, which is called Heartbeat. Maybe you guys heard it a while back. I put it on Facebook.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
okay, yeah, so that was
amazing.
That day.
And I'm going to do my best to link that in the show notes, because that was an absolutely unbelievable. I remember the minute I heard that, I ran to Carol and I said, you have to come hear this. And she's like, oh, that's amazing. Who is that? And I was like, that's Brandon. And she's like, wow. Thanks.
But spoiler alert, make sure every one of you grabs an entire box of tissues before you listen to the song, because it hits you right here. It's amazing.
Funny.
It's so amazing.
Well, thank
you. Anyway.
Thank you. Well, okay. Anyway, so that was the day, right? So, I mean, like I got to record in the studio, but what really it came out with that in that time was seeing how his team worked. And what I mean by that is he had like four or five people working there. They showed up kind of when they wanted. They kind of went home when they wanted, but they all worked all day long and more. They hung out at night afterwards, going out for drinks. They all had like these people are world-class at what they do. Everybody was just like a rock star what they did. And I saw this and I was so inspired by it at the time. And it made it like, I mean, still to this day, I talk about it all the time, how much of an impact that had on me. And I thought, that would be cool. Like, what if I had a team of people? So I started from that end, start with the end in mind, right? I said, what would it be like to have that, like a team of people that I just loved and I wanted to do life with, you know, like to a large degree and hang out with every day. Not because I had to go hang out with these coworkers, but what would it be like to have a life where I could like do work and do meaningful work with like rock stars? And I started from there and I worked backwards. So that's the recommendation I have is, again, think in your past, like what just inspires you to be like, I want that. And then I could work backwards. So I said, what does that look like? And so on this plane ride, that's what I did. I said, well, what would it look like? I would need to have four or five people. Okay. So what would they all be doing? Well, I mean, what if I had like an acquisitions manager who's in charge of buying deals full time? And what if I had somebody who was just in charge of managing the property manager? So like an asset manager. Okay. What if I would also then need, oh, by the way, this also, let me caveat here. I had, at the time we interviewed Tim Ferriss on our podcast and he says this thing often and he said it on our show as well, is start asking, what if it was easy? Like, what if it were easy? So I'm like, well, what would it look like to have a big real estate business with five people and it was easy? So that's where these roles came from. It's like, well, I don't want to handle the finding the deals. I'm not going to handle managing the properties afterwards. I'm not going to manage the money. I'm going to need an investor relations person raising money. I don't want to handle, you know, the actual like dealings of the team, like all the irritating things. So I need an operations manager. And then like all the little stuff in my life, I'm going to need an executive assistant. Well, there's four or five people right there, right? And so I worked backwards from that. And like, I can actually, like, for those watching on video, I'll just turn on my camera real quick and show you. This is what my vivid vision ended up looking like. It's kind of hard to see here, But what it is, it's a giant poster. And so there's a lot of ways to do it. My friend Seth, who owns a music company, he did a Vivid Vision and he made his a trifold pamphlet. Like you open up in threefold and it was like, welcome to, you know, Full Circle Music. And it was the year 2021. And here's what we are and here's what we do. And that was his creative way of doing it. And I love the pamphlet. And other people do just like a blog post. I've seen that style. Some people just like have painted a picture. They don't even have words. They paint a picture. It's like whatever like sparks you creatively. So I did a newspaper article written about my company 3 years in the future. And it's called the $50 million Surfers. And it says how a small team of adventure seekers built a real estate empire. Hold on, I gotta read this up. Helped millions achieve financial freedom and kept their humanity intact. And I basically then wrote an article. Like it starts even like, you know, December 31st, 2021, comma, Maui, Hawaii. Open door capital is blah, 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 blah. Like, and it's just like an article. And I go through everything from like, what do we do? How many units do we have? What does the media say about us? How do we generate leads? Like, how do we feel about the business? How do other people feel about us? What do our employees think? What kind of benefits do they have? I mean, things like, I mean, I could go on all day, but I can even take a picture of you guys. We can put it on the show notes page. I can even show you the entire thing.
I would love that. And I'll tell you, this is so timely. Literally, what was it, Carol? 2 hours ago, Carol and I were sitting down talking. So a lot of people who listen probably know we moved down to Florida a few months ago and we spent the summer kind of getting settled. Our kids went back to school today. And basically, I walked into Carol's office this morning with kind of this dilemma that I'm ready to do something big next. And I know Carol's in the same boat. She's ready to do something next. And literally 2 hours ago, we were talking about what is that next thing? How do we figure out that next thing? Because I've had some ideas that just, they don't get me excited. The same thing you were saying. They didn't get me excited. And I walked out of that 2 hours ago saying, okay, we'll keep thinking about it. And I love this idea of a vision and creating a vision and actually creating something physical that defines your vision, whether it's an article, whether it's a pamphlet, whether it's a movie, whether it's a book, whether it's a fake biography that kind of, and, yep. And it sounds like a lot of these are what you're doing is it's like writing a letter from your future self to yes. your today self. This yep. is where I am 3 years, 5 years, 10 years in the future. And just like you were saying, you work backwards from there. It's working backwards. Figure out where you're going to be in 3, 5, 10 years and just work backwards.
Yeah,
totally. And it also feels like doing it in that manner almost gives you something tangible where you hold yourself accountable to that. Like you almost owe it to yourself to find the way to get to that so that you are achieving that really awesome thing that matters to you. Yeah. So with that, how, Brandon, like, what's the plan to get to be that $50 million surfing real estate company, right? Like, how do we take this big, hairy, audacious goal that you have, you know, mapped out in your amazing newspaper article? And how do you take that big thing and break it down into smaller pieces or whatever you do to actually make a reality?
I want to generalize that even more because anybody that knows Brandon, either just by listening to this or through your backstory, I mean, the amount you've achieved is incredible. You've done your 100 units, you've done another several hundred, many hundreds of units of mobile home. You've written best-selling books. You are the co-host of one of the biggest podcasts in the world. You are basically the face of one of the biggest real estate investing forums and communities in the world. And on top of that, I'm not to take anything away from you. A lot of people do some amazing things in business. They do a tremendous amount. But on top of that, you've moved to Hawaii. You put your family first. I know that personally and people that have talked to you, I've seen that you put your family first. You put your wife first. You're raising your kids. You're surfing every day. How do you manage your time and optimize your productivity such that you can not just achieve all this, but you can juggle it successfully?
Oh yeah. Good questions. All right. So the answer to both those are kind of, I guess I'll kind of say similar stuff. So first of all, once I have like the vision, by the way, includes stuff about personal life as well. So I start from a vision of where I want to be. And then I work backwards to, okay, well, in order to have that vision, well, what does that look like in terms of a goal for year one? Like, what do I have to have in year one? And so my goal was to have 100 more units under contract this year to buy this year. And like I said, I think I'm at 500 right now, which it's funny when you set a vision for yourself and you have just complete clarity on where you're going. It's amazing the speed at which you'll get there, faster than you ever thought. Like I applied I wanted 1,000 units, $50 million of real estate in 3 years. If I really want it, I'll accomplish it this year. I mean, I'm halfway through the year now and I'm halfway to the goal. Like I could probably accomplish it by the end of the year. So I work backwards from that to have a 1 year goal to then set 90 day sprints where I'm like, I use like this. I have the 90 day journal that we're actually launching, I think today. So I use that to take the 1 year goal down to a 90 day goal. Then from there, it has like a section for like weekly battle plan. So like, what is this week? What am I accomplishing this week? I mean, just this morning, we're recording this on a Monday morning. This morning was I do my weekly battle plan every Monday morning. So I go through on what are my three goals that I'm working most towards? And that includes, to go to your question, Jay, it includes things about family. Like so many people are good, especially business owners, are great at setting goals for their business. And they're great at saying, we're going to get this, we're hit this benchmark by this date. But they completely ignore setting goals for their family or for their relationships, for their health and fitness. It's like people feel like you can only choose one thing. And if there's like one message, I think if I can get out to the world is like, you can have it all. Like you really can. Like you're not gonna be perfect. You're not gonna be world-class in every single thing that you want to do in life, but you could be pretty good in every area as long as you're focused and tracking every area that's important to you. But the reason your marriage sucks is because you're not regularly evaluating your marriage. I mean, most likely. But you guys, I know you do. Like you look at your life and you're like, well, you know, how do we do this better? I mean, my wife and I, every January 1st, we go out together and we do this goal setting retreat, just me and her at the beach out in Washington State. And we review last year's goals. We set this year's goals. In fact, 2 years ago, we set a goal on January 1st. Like a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, we set a goal that we were going to someday, within 5 years, we were going to have a home in Hawaii that had an extra unit that people could come and visit us and stay with us. We wrote that down as our 5-year goal or 5-year vision, right? But again, like I said earlier, when you have crystal clarity on a vision, the speed at which you can accomplish that like improves dramatically. And so it took us not 18, I mean, we bought a house 6 months later in Hawaii, even though we could never.
Taking a trend here.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's like get clarity, like real, real clarity on what you want. And again, it doesn't matter that much what you want. Like you're not stumbling across it. So just pick something that's cool, get clarity, like real clarity. I mean, my vision is like, I don't know, it's probably 2,000 words. Like it's long. It's not just like, you know, this is how much money we make. It's everything. And then start working backwards towards it and you'll get it accomplished much faster. So anyway, so I have my goals. I have things that I like, you know, health and fitness wise. And the truth is like, if you want to improve all those areas, like I said, you can have it in all areas of your life. It doesn't require a tremendous amount of work in any of them. This is like the if I had one like secret to goal accomplishment or like success, it's in that. Let me try to like, you ever read a book? Like how long does it take to read a typical book? I've used this analogy a lot, but I'll say it again. Like, are you guys reading anything right now? Like book wise?
I'm reading a book called The Alchemist.
Okay. I've read that. That's a great book.
Good book.
Let me actually ask you this question. I'm going to change it. Is there any book you're reading right now that you've been reading for months? Like you just haven't gotten through it. Like you started it 6 months ago or a year ago.
Yeah. About 90% of the books on my bookshelf I've been reading for 10 years.
Okay. Yes. Does it now, if you were to tell somebody I've been reading this book for 10 years, like you are the slowest reader on the planet. I mean, come on, like one word a week. But of course the truth is what do? We pick it up and read for an hour.
Yep.
We put it down. We don't pick it up again for 6 months. We pick it up and read for 2 hours.
Yep.
It's the same thing as the guy who goes to the gym and he gets to the gym and he lifts weights hardcore for an hour. And he's like pushing and pulling and getting swole. And then he leaves and he comes back 2 months later and he does it again. Like, so most people, like the reason that we fail to accomplish most things in life is because people put too much space in between the action steps of like, you know, like the reading is just an analogy, but like in anything in life, right? So if you can just shorten that, I call it dead space. If you can shorten that time, you can accomplish so much. It's the fact that we haven't identified what that next step is. And we haven't time blocked that step. And if you just do those two things, right? You identify what your most important next step is. MINS is what I call it, MINS. Identify your MINS and then time block it. Put it on your calendar. Identify it and then put it on there. Like you'll get that done. If it's like every day you read for 20 minutes, you can read, I've heard the stats, like you read 50 books a year if you just read 20 minutes a day.
Yep.
Right? It's the consistency of doing that, over and over and over and over. Identify what your most important next step is. and then put it on your calendar. And so like, not to sound like I'm turning into a pitch here, but like, that's what this whole journal, like that we're launching today, like that's what we have a spot in there. Like, what is your most important next step for this goal? And the fact is we just don't identify it usually. Like we just don't even, it's probably a 5 minute task. We just don't do it.
Yeah.
But I also think it is, it's also that second part of that equation, Brandon, just like you said, it's the identifying it, but then blocking it in there and not letting anything interrupt it, no matter what, that has to be solid in there.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it's fine because my follow-up question was going to be, tell us about some of the tools you use to basically capture these goals and ensure that you're actually held accountable. And you mentioned the journal and you said it's a 90-day journal.
Yes. So it's a 90 journal. It's called the Intention Journal. We launched it a year ago, a previous version. It was called the 90 Days of Intention Journal. We're just relaunching it now, a brand new version of it called the Intention Journal, because technically it's 90 days long, what somebody could use it, you know, if they had a 180. We don't want people to be like, well, my goal is going to take a year, so I don't need this journal. Fine. You can still use the journal. So we relaunched it. We changed a couple of things, made it a little bit better. I like it 10 times more, but the original one was great and I still use it. But now the new one's being launched. I'm going to switch to that one because it's just got a few things that we were like, oh, you know what would be really cool is to add this in. It's just based on science, research, psychology, as what actually helps people get things accomplished. So yeah, identifying your mins, putting it on your calendar. There's a spot where the new edition now has a calendar spot in there. Identifying what that is and then actually getting it done. And Carol, you brought up that really good point of like actually doing it, right? Because here's a funny thing. If you had a call today with, you know, insert politician's name here, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, you know, somebody that you like really like, right? Or Bill Gates, right? You had a call with Bill Gates today at 4:00. Like, would you show up to that call? Of course you would. Like,
of course.
Yeah, who wouldn't show up to that? Like, Elon Musk wants to come over for coffee today at 5:00. You going to be there? You drop everything. But then who's more important in your life for your future, Elon Musk or you? Right? Like Elon Musk is not that important. So why would we treat an interview with Elon Musk that much more important? And yet we treat ourselves, appointments with ourselves, dates with ourselves with such disregard of, oh, it's just Brandon. I don't have to go to this appointment. It's just me. And changing that mindset of this is the most important thing I can do ever is huge.
I absolutely love that. Can you share with us? And I, again, like you said, I don't want to turn this into a pitch for the 90 Day Intention Journal, but this is because we're talking about goals and we're talking about productivity and we're talking about tools that we use to achieve that. I want to dig into this a little bit more. So can you give us an idea of like, what are one or two of the business and the personal goals that you're tracking in your journal right now?
Yeah, sure. So like this morning, I'll show you. I got three goals. So I have a spot in the journal for three goals. And by the way, quick side story. So back January 1st, I started a 90-day sprint. I was doing things on quarters. So January, February, March, my 90-day goal that I set on January 1st was to put one mobile home park under contract and have it at least 50 units. That was my 90-day goal. And the next one was to have a 34-inch waist. And the next one was to spend less than an hour per day on average on my phone. So I tracking. So one of those was a business goal, was real estate. One of those was a fitness goal. And one of them was I'll call it like family goal, because I knew that the best way for me to be a better husband and a better father was to spend less time on my phone. Because the average person spends 4.5 hours a day on their phone. And I knew I was right up there with them.
Stop.
It's crazy.
Stop staring at me, Carol Scott.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel my eyes like shooting lasers right now?
If you guys don't track that stuff, man, just tracking it makes you feel like a piece of crap. But then what you measure gets changed, right? I don't know. There's a lot of quotes about that, but like what you measure is going to change in your life. And so once you start measuring and tracking your time. So anyway, those were my three goals originally for my 90-day goal. And so every day I'd wake up, I mean, every single day, and I write down like, what time did I wake up? Did I drink water this morning? That's huge important. Did I do some kind of exercise? Did I read? Like I read something out of a business book, something out of like a spiritual book, right? Then I go, here's my gratitude, like I'm grateful for. So I do that every single morning. Then I'd work through, here's what my goals are. And writing down your goals every single day, I think, is one of the most important things you can do. So I write down, here's those three goals. Boom. That way it's always top of mind. Because again, it's not that we can't achieve our goals. It's that we let days, weeks, months go by before we focus on them. So like, honestly, like, let me be real here. Like the last week and a half, 2 weeks, I have not been very good with my journal. I've had people visiting. I was off island for a little bit and I've not been very consistent. I've gained almost 10 pounds in the last 2 weeks. Why? Like, I mean, I lost 40 pounds in the past year. I've lost 40 pounds and I've just gained back almost 10 of them in 2 weeks. Why? Because I took my hand, I mean, took my eyes off the goal. I stopped writing my goal every single morning. So this morning I was like, dang it, I'm getting back into it. Like, I got to build that habit again because I was so good for the first like 6 months of it, right? And that happens. Like, even I'm the guy that wrote the journal. It happens. So anyway, I'm going here. Here's where I'm going with that story. Every day I got up and I did this. I reviewed my goals, identified what is the next thing I got to do. What is my weekly outcome? What do I need to get done this week to be on track for my 90 days, right? What's the most important next step? I put it on my calendar. I get it done. At the end of 90 days, we had not... The goal was to get 50 units under contract. We ended up getting 300 units under contract.
Wow.
And so like completely blew by the goal because I just, once you identify, again, once you have a vision and you have a target that you're hitting and you're have that clarity, you'll achieve the results you want much faster. So this was so important, is having this system, I guess, in my life.
Okay. So
that's a cool system.
Yeah. So while we're on it, let's turn this into a little pitch. Cause I think that's okay. Cause, now I'm intrigued. If I want to get the intention journal that, you and Bigger Pockets have just launched, can you tell me a little bit more about how I can get it? Sure. And where I go and what I get?
Gladly. BiggerPockets.com/journal. It's really simple. BiggerPockets.com/journal. The new one that's being launched today is super, super high quality. We actually just like upped the quality significantly. It costs us a whole lot more money, but we're still signing up for the same price because like I wanted something that like, so it's got like this leathery, like it's not actual leather, it's vegan, but like leather feeling cover. It's got like ribbons in there. It's got all this cool stuff that we didn't have last time. So it's very, very cool. You also, there's a bunch of bonuses that come with it. So if you do buy it, for example, you get a goal setting class that I'm actually hosting. It's a video that I'm basically hosting on goal setting and a live online productivity masterclass on how I get, like basically how to get twice as much done in half the time. But then most importantly, and this is where I think we could go next real quick is you actually get access to an accountability group. So mastermind groups are a huge piece of everything I've ever done successful has been because I've been a part of mastermind groups. And I saw that of how like, being together with 3, 4, 5, I mean, other people who are also working towards their goals has been so big for me. So we incorporate it. So anybody who gets the journal also gets invited to join a mastermind group of your own with other Bigger Pockets and people who bought the journal. So you can all have your own goals, but you meet together based on your schedule. And we just put you together and give you some guidelines and rules kind of to work your mastermind group. And then it's yours. You can actually do it. And in fact, I think more people last time we launched the journal a year ago, almost more people bought the journal because of the mastermind groups than because of the journal itself. And so if you don't even want the journal, you just want the mastermind group, just get the journal and just join the mastermind group. It's been huge for me is having this group of like, I work with two guys right now. We're in a group of three right now. And it's Chris and Seth. And these two guys and us, like we meet together at least every other week. Sometimes we try to get a call in every week. And just constantly spurring each other on towards, hey, what is your goal? Where are you at on your goal? What are you struggling with? How can we help? Yeah, it's been huge.
This whole idea of a mastermind, it's funny because the last year or two, that's the big thing. Everybody's talking about you got to do a mastermind group and what mastermind groups are you part of and who are you networking with and where are you flying to do your mastermind group? But for those of us that have been in business and real estate investing for a long time, we've been doing this mastermind thing forever. I mean, we all have those people that we surround ourselves with. I mean, you and I have been chatting on and off about real estate for the last 10 years, ever since I found your blog, you probably found my blog, and you just have those people in your life that you can bounce things off of. But formalizing that relationship and holding each other accountable and making each other define your goals in detail, really, it takes it to the next level. And it really forces you to really take action and continue to take action.
You know, there was a study done, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but the Dominican University did this study. And it walked people through. They had to set a goal. They grabbed a whole bunch of people and had them set a goal and then they broke them into five groups. And I think the first group was like, hey, you have a goal. The second group was you have a goal and you wrote it down. The third group was you have a goal, you wrote it down, you wrote out action steps. The fourth one was you shared it with a friend. And the fifth step was you have your goal, you wrote it down, you wrote down your action steps like we've been talking about. You shared it with a friend and you met weekly for accountability. And looking at the chart, like it was like, over doubled. I think it was almost three times. It was like 30% of people who set the goal ended up accomplishing it. And at the end of the chart, it was like 90% who had the full five had accomplished their goal. And so it just shows like, and the biggest one, I mean, by far the biggest one was having that weekly accountability. So setting your goal, writing it down, like being clear on it, you know, having action steps, knowing what your actually process looks like to get it accomplished, having a friend know about it, and then getting weekly accountability. You include those five things and it's like, it was like 92% of people accomplished their goal because of that compared to like 30. That's crazy.
Yeah. And for me, the big one there is having a friend that knows about it, because too often we like have this idea and we're like, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm not going to tell anybody until I get some traction.
Yep.
But what you don't realize, or maybe you do realize it, is that you're not going to get the traction until you've told somebody, because that's the thing that's going to keep you accountable. It's going to keep you moving forward.
On that note, I read another study when I was putting this together that said, you know, should you talk about your goals publicly? And there's different, some studies have shown that actually, like, they followed some people who publicly talked about their goals and they severely decreased their chance of accomplishing it. Yet other people show that they increased it. And so this article kind of tried to figure out why that is. And here's what they came up with. When you go and post a goal online, like on Facebook, and you say, hey, everybody, I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 24. What that does is everybody goes, yeah, you got this, man. You're awesome. And you get that dopamine hit. You get that, like, that you get the victory without the pain, and your chances of getting accomplishing it decreases. And so because you already won in your head, your subconscious thinks you already accomplished it, even though you didn't. Hey guys, I'm going to lose 30 pounds in the next month. And everyone's like, yeah, you got this. You're excited. Like, you don't get it. But when you tell one or two people or three people or a small mastermind group, you don't get that dopamine like, wow, you're the best. You get, okay, well, what are you going to do about it?
Yep.
Like, what's that look like? And that's why telling a small group of trusted people is far more valuable and more important and more likely to get your goal accomplished than telling the world over on Instagram or Facebook.
Really cool. Really cool.
Before we move on to the next part of our show, let's hear from one of our show sponsors.
Small business owners wear a lot of hats. And while some hats are really great, others, like the filing taxes and running payroll hat, yeah, not so great. So that's where Gusto comes in. Gusto makes payroll, taxes, and managing a team actually easy for small businesses. Gusto automatically pays and files your federal, state, and local taxes, so you don't have to worry about it. Plus, they make it easy to add on health benefits and even 401ks for your team. Oh, and you can even get direct access to certified HR experts too. 90% of customers say switching to Gusto was easy. You can do it in less than 10 minutes. And if you're thinking, oh, I already work with tools like, say, QuickBooks, well, get this. Gusto can integrate with those platforms, so you can keep everything in one place, all online. So listen up for this offer. Because you listen to Bigger Pockets Business, you get 3 months free when you run your first payroll on Gusto. This is one hat you're going to be glad you gave up. So try a demo and see for yourself at gusto.com/BPB, like Bigger Pockets Business. Again, that's gusto.com/BPB.
I own a bunch of rental property. And if you do as well, then this probably sounds familiar. You've got a vacancy, so you list your place on a bunch of websites, Craigslist, Padmapper, Zillow, Facebook. Then you get a bunch of applications for your property via email. Then you use yet another website to screen the applicants, and that's before you even have a tenant in the property. Well, here's a great way to keep everything in one place. Cozy provides property management tools to help you save time. So there's no need for keeping 20 tabs open in your browser. You can list, screen, collect rent, and track expenses and maintenance requests online. And the best part is, it's completely free. Plus, I'm an engineer, so I really appreciate this. Cozy's user interface is simple, intuitive, and pleasing to the eye. So, whether you're frustrated with your current property manager or you've been doing everything manually, check out Cozy at cozy.co and get your time back so you can do more of what matters. Again, that's cozy.co. Give them a try today.
So, you mentioned a couple times a week, or at least once a week, you'll talk with your mastermind groups. And so you've got that going on. You've got this amazing real estate business that is, it is a freight train. It is just going and going with no end in sight. You're the face of Bigger Pockets. You're a husband and a father. You have all of these things going on. And I want to know, and I know there are lots of other listeners who want to know also, Brandon, what is a day in your life like? How do you fit all this in? Just walk us through. You get up in the morning. What happens from there? What is a day in the life of Brandon Turner?
Good question. So the last few months have been different than the months previous, but I'll go through what recently has been. Typically I get up like 5:30 a.m. The great part about Hawaii is that you get up super early because the birds start chirping. Like they're, and we call them alarm clock birds.
And it's 6 hours earlier than where I am. Yeah. So it's easy to get up early.
It is. Like I get up at like, you know, five, let's say 5:30 and it's like already like halfway through the day for everyone on the East Coast. So, which is great. So I get up early. I get work done. I usually try to, you know, in the first hour, it's like me time. Like Rosie and Heather usually aren't up until about 7:30. So the first hour is me. So I go through my journal every single morning. I drink that cup of water every single morning. Like that became a habit for me because, like, you know, we wake up dehydrated every day. So when you immediately rehydrate yourself, everything else goes better. So it just starts with that, anchoring that thing. I'm such a big believer in like developing good habits for yourself. Which, by the way, in the journal, not to revisit that and kill a dead horse. Is that what it's called? Beat a dead horse?
Beat a dead horse.
But yeah, not to beat a dead horse here.
Toasting on the dead horse.
Yeah, but there's actually a spot in the journal. It's like a weekly daily habit tracker. So like I actually write down like, what are the habits I want to build that should help me accomplish other things in life? So for example, right now I have like asleep by 10 p.m. If I can be asleep by 10 p.m., I know that everything else, like a whole lot of other good things will come out from that. Like in the next day, I'll wake up earlier. I'll get more accomplished. I'll be more rested, blah, blah, blah. Going to the gym, reading every single day. Do I do that 7 days a week? Do I have meetings with my team 2 times a week? Like, is that a habit we've built? So anyway, having those habits is important. So I try to make my first hour of the day just very routine, very habit. So again, going through that, I try to do some stretching in the morning, et cetera. Then I go into my sea shed. I built like this office, my little work sanctuary studio in my front yard, basically. And I go in there. And usually that's when I knock out Bigger Pockets stuff. So I'll spend a few hours podcasting or, you know, meeting with people for Bigger Pockets, writing, making videos, things like that. Then by like, you know, 9-ish in the morning, I'll go inside, eat breakfast with the family, and then just usually hang out with them for a few hours. And then in the afternoon, usually meet with Ryan on real estate stuff. And that's when we'll kind of knock out Ryan, by the way, Ryan Murdoch, was a buddy of mine. He actually brought me that very first mobile home park. And oh, I never brought this back in earlier when I said I was going to. So I'm a big believer in telling people about your goals. Big believer in that. So like if you have something you want to accomplish, tell people what you're looking for. Not just your goals, but what you're looking for, right? And be specific. Have that clarity. So I mentioned at a meetup out in New York City when I was speaking, I said I was looking for a mobile home park. If anybody knows of any, let me know. So this guy, Ryan Murdoch, who had been on the podcast, the Bigger Pockets podcast, the real estate show, he emailed me and said, hey, I actually just got an email from a friend of mine who's selling his mobile home park. So Ryan and I bought that park together alongside Mindy Jensen of the Money Podcast. The three of us joined forces, bought it together. And that's what made me want to buy mobile home parks. Because the one, it was, again, what would be cool? Well, I really like our mobile home park. That worked out really well. And we make a lot of money from it. Let's do that. So again, not that it's the best thing in the world, but find something that you like, that works well, that inspires you and say, okay, I'm just going to do that. So that's how that is. So anyway, so then Ryan, when I moved out to Hawaii, I called him and asked him for help for a week. I was like, can I give you a flight out to Hawaii in exchange for helping me move, basically? And he never left. So I'm still trying to get rid of him. But no, like, so him and his wife, Pinky, moved in here. And so they live in the extra, I have like a 3-unit house. There's 3 units here. There's one in the back, one down below, and one up above. So Ryan lives in the back house. And then we just work together. And remember I said earlier, like that my vision was to have people that I just loved and respected that were rock stars I could do life with. Every single day I get to experience that. Because like, I mean, even right now it's just Ryan, but we brought in an asset manager to run our team, Brian Murray. And Brian wrote the book, Crushing It in Commercial Real Estate. So Brian's our asset manager. He's a rock star. And I get to like do business with him now. So my vision is coming more and more.
How great is that? Yeah. Completely coming to fruition.
It's coming to fruition because I know where I'm headed. So anyway, so we work in the afternoon usually for a couple hours on random real estate stuff. But Ryan really takes the bulk of that, which is, again, like I'm trying to set up, what if it was easy? What would it be like to build a $50 million real estate portfolio of mobile home parks easy? Like, what would that look like? Mm-hmm. And so again, Ryan does the bulk of that work right now. Anyway, we go to the beach every day, pretty much. I mean, there's hardly a day we don't make it down to one of the beaches. Maui has more beaches than any other Hawaiian islands. So we spend a lot of time at them. I try to surf a few times a week. Not every day yet, but that's only because I'm a weenie and I'm like, oh, I got to go out and paddle again. My arms are sore.
Well, it sounds like at some point we're going to have a discussion, maybe another episode on delegation, because it sounds like you've done a really good job of surrounding yourself with people that you can offload a lot of these important tasks to, but tasks that, again, as you said, you're the visionary, you're the guy kind of at the center running it all, and you've been able to offload a lot of these really important tasks to really smart people who kind of allow you to be successful. They're successful too, but you're kind of the face of it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a big lesson I learned over the last few years, a business lesson that I used to have to choose between working with, like, I felt like I had to choose between working with people I liked, or, you know, people I really liked a lot and got along with well, and people who were just rock stars at their thing. And for years, I chose between the two. I would hire someone I really, really liked, but they just weren't experienced. They didn't have the ability, and not that they were bad people, but they weren't right for the role. And then other times I hired people or worked with people, and it doesn't mean I hired them, but maybe have bigger pockets or at other things or contractors, whatever, that were awesome at their job. We just didn't get along. We just didn't work together well. And what I realized in Nashville, that's what clicked for me that day in Nashville when I went there and I flew with my friend, I saw his company working, is I saw the like rock stars who got along well. And I realized at that moment, you don't have to choose between the two. You can have both. It's harder to find both. But if you get both, that fixes a lot of stuff. So yeah, I've been really focused lately on how do I find people that I would love to do life with that are also top of their game. And I want both. I don't want to have to ever choose between those two things again.
That's great. Okay. So Brandon, before we jump into the final segment of the show, I do have one more question. So I know what you're working on now. I know what you've accomplished and your big, hairy, audacious goal of a $50 million real estate surf company. Real estate surf company, something like that.
We can call that. Yeah, we can call that.
Real estate, surf, palm trees, coconuts, yes. Whatever it is. Just 50,
lifestyle yeah, business that makes yeah. a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah. So is there anything really big other than that on the horizon for you? What else is, what's the other, if anything, in your intention journal right now?
Yeah. So, the real estate thing, I mean, is a big focus right now. I mean, for business wise, growing the real estate thing. So I created like a fund, like I have a 506c fund, so I can raise money now officially from accredited investors, which means I can actually legally talk about it on a podcast. So anyway, I have that going. I mean, that'll be full by the time this episode comes out, but I'll probably do more. I'm sure I'll do more, but I'm excited about that. I'm just raising money and helping other people kind of be able to do it. Planning on writing more books. I got like three in my head, and I was telling you guys before we recorded, I've got like the covers spec'd out for new books, real estate books, but I haven't actually written them yet. But again, it goes back to the clarity thing though, right? Like I have like a very clear vision on what the book is going to be and I've outlined it. Now I got to actually do the work of writing down. So I deliberately did not put that in my journal this quarter because I'm like, I know I'm not going to get to it. So I'm not even worrying about it. I'll probably add it next quarter, the quarter after will be, and I will write a book in 90 days. Like that will be my 90 day goal. And I will I will break down to my weekly, hey, by this week, I need to have this many words written. And today I need it. Like it's really going from vision to 90 day to quarter to whatever. So that's a big one. And other than that, just, you know, I got a little baby boy on the way. So my wife is pregnant. So yeah.
So excited.
Rosie's going to have a little brother.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pumped for that. But really it's fleshing out the vision on where I'm going to. And at the end of the vision, it says that Brandon Turner is a New York Times bestselling author. So you heard it here first. I'm going to eventually get that New York Times name. We'll see. That's my goal. That's my vision.
Great goal.
Yeah.
Let me know if you need a co-author on that one.
Okay, I will.
That's cool. But I have to backtrack just a touch.
Yeah.
Do you think new little baby Turner will come out with a big, amazing beard?
Yes. Yes. Clearly. Like a baby boy Turner, which we still don't have a name for him yet. We're trying on different names, but we'll get one eventually. It's actually a requirement. We'll put him back in if he doesn't have the beard yet, and we'll wait until he has one. Yeah. So, yeah.
I like the priority.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes. Very priority.
Awesome. Okay. Well, now let's move on to the final segment of the show. It's something that we call the four more, where we're going to ask you four questions. And then after that, we're going to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit more about where our listeners can find out more about you. Sound good?
Sounds good. That sounds awesome.
Okay. I am going to take the first question, if that's okay with you, Carol.
All right.
Brandon Turner, what was your first or your worst job? And what lessons did you take from it that have helped you succeed since then?
Boom. First, can I answer both? Cause they're different. First
Absolutely.
Job was I carried out groceries at a grocery store for my first job. It was pretty good. I mean, it taught me like the value of hard work and customer service. So I did that for a little while. Worst job I ever had was probably, and I hope my old boss isn't listening to this, but I worked at a bank for like a year. At a national bank as like a banker who opened checking accounts and credit cards for people and lines of credit, home equity loans and stuff like that. That was I gained a lot of experience and I'm really good today with the financing side of things because of it. But man, like the pressure, I mean, you guys have heard about the whole like Wells Fargo drama a few years ago, but like these people like were like opening up. I mean, I have 25 checking accounts. Why? Because we were told if you don't open X amount of checking accounts this week, you're going to lose your job. And so like, I would literally be like, hey, who wants to check it? Like everybody in the branch would open up checking accounts for each other because we had to have them because there was such pressure to perform. And like we lived, I mean, the town had 3,000 people in it. Like I can't really do that much to get people. So anyway, that was a horrible job. I remember like I'd stare at the clock, just watching that minute hand tick by. Right. And like, it was like 9:05 and I'm like, oh, it's just 7 hours more, 7 hours, 55 minutes more.
Carol and I used to walk into our local Wells Fargo branch. That's where we always banked. And there was a woman there and it doesn't matter, but I'm not going to mention her name, but literally we would walk in every day. She'd just kind of wave us over and just beg us. Will you just open up one account, please? Yeah. It'll help me so much.
I already have the paperwork.
Yep. Just, all you have to do is sign it. Exactly.
Yep. That's exactly what we had to do, stuff like that as well. And I didn't work for Wells Fargo, but it was another competitor of theirs. And it was just horrible. Like, so like people listen to this show, like some of you guys are like still working a job like that. Like, I feel for you. Like that day, like when Sunday night comes and you just dread going to sleep because you know you got to wake up in the next morning. Like, man, there's so much better out there. Like, there's so much better out there.
Absolutely.
Totally. Yeah. Yes. Okay, I'll take the next question, Brandon. What is an opportunity along the way that you've said no to? And do you think it was the right decision?
Oh, wow. That's an unbelievably good question. An opportunity I said no to. So 4 years ago, I had the opportunity to move to Denver. What happened was Josh was starting to scale the team. This is when Scott first came on. And we were like, this is like a thing. Like this is like this, something magical is happening here. And Josh was like, I think you should move to Denver. And I was like, I think I should too. And so Heather and I were finally on board. Like we were on board with going and, we were like all for it. We were going to sell our house and it was like a huge opportunity to move to Denver and be a bigger part of the actual team. Cause those people, a lot of people don't know the inner workings of Bigger Pockets, but like, I'm like the only guy really who's not in Denver. I mean, there's a couple others now, Kevin here, who's a producer of our podcast. He's out in DC. And we have a couple of developers in the UK, but everybody's at the office, right? And we could see that was the way it was going. So I said I was going to move to Denver. And then I actually went to this like, so I'm like, I was a youth leader at a church for the last like decade before I moved to Hawaii. And I went to this conference. And while I was there, every single speaker who spoke at this event, everyone said the same message. Don't quit where you're at. God has you right where he wants you. And it was like over and over and over and just drilled it. And I got home from that and Heather and I just looked at each other and were like whether or not that was like divine inspiration or saying I shouldn't do it, or whether it was just like, because this is a ministry type conference and they know everybody's dealing with that, I want to quit. But like, we were like, we can't go, like we're needed here. I would say definitely that was the right choice. I mean, I love Bigger Pockets and I love everything about them, but I am not a corporate guy. I am not a 9-to-5 commute kind of a person. And I think I would have been driven crazy and probably wouldn't be here today if I would have had to do that. Instead, I spent another 2 years at home building up real estate and moved to Hawaii, which much more suits my personality. So I think I'm glad I made that choice.
If you were meant to be in Denver, you'd be in Denver. You're meant to be in Hawaii.
That's what I feel like. Side note, like we actually went to Denver, looked for places like that we could live and nothing just felt right. Then we thought, you know, a couple of years later, we went to Hawaii, you know, after this whole thing, came to Oahu, spent 3 months on Oahu looking everywhere. Nothing felt right. And it wasn't until we flew over to Maui for a couple of days, just for a quick weekend trip. And Rosie fell asleep in the car and we were driving around and we drove down this highway and I saw a open house sign. And because I'm a real estate investor, we like to stop at open houses sometimes. So I drove up to this neighborhood and I went to this open house and I stood on this front lanai, this like porch, we call them lanais in Hawaii. I stood on the lanai and I just looked at the ocean and I was like this incredible ocean view and the pool and this. And I was like, I found it. I found it. It's done. And like,
you are home. Yeah, you are
that's
home,
what it was.
Right there.
Earlier, I said like that with opportunities in business, it's not like you're like uncovering something hidden in the sand. With a home, though, I think you are oftentimes. Like it's almost like that home was already mine and it fits. Yeah. So I was meant to live in this home, but I was not meant to move to Denver.
That's awesome. So. Love it.
Great answer. Okay.
Question number three, what's the worst advice that either you've been given or that's popular in our industry, your industry, the real estate industry? And how do you take that advice and turn it around to make it good advice?
Oh, wow. I'm going to go with follow your passion. And I'm totally stealing this from that book, Deep Work. And So Good They Can't Ignore You, both by Cal Newport. But he makes this point, and I completely agree with him. People are always like, I got to find my passion and then follow it. You know, and so I really like baking cookies. So I want to open a bakery because I'm following my passion. But as anybody who's read the E-Myth knows, like that's generally a horrible idea because following your passion tends to make it no longer your passion.
Yep.
And so if you completely follow, like just like whatever you like doing, I mean, I really like music. But I don't follow music passionately because I don't think I'd enjoy it much if I was in the business of it. I liked politics until in college, I did an internship for a person running for US Senate. They won. And I never wanted to be in politics again. It's not about following your passion. It's about picking something that makes you feel good and fulfilled. Doesn't mean it's your biggest passion in the world. And then working at it until it becomes like, until the work becomes your passion. Because if you don't love the work involved, you'll never accomplish it. There's that book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, where he makes the point in there that we shouldn't look at goals as much as what do we want to accomplish? We should say, what pain are we willing to put up with? And so like the people who are in shape are the people who like the pain of working out. The people who are good at real estate are the ones who like the pain of analyzing deals and negotiating. And so, yeah, don't necessarily follow your passion, but be diligent in your work so that the work becomes your passion. The pain becomes your passion.
Love it.
Very cool. Okay, Brandon, what is something that you have splurged on that was totally worth it?
A multi-$1 million house in Hawaii. But here's the truth.
Can't argue with that.
Here's the backstory. And I don't think I've ever told this on the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Show either, but here's a story of the house. Like it's like a, you know, almost $2 million house. I mean, I make good money, but I also recognize we're in the greatest economy in the history of mankind. And that what happens in good economies is that people who make good money, people are buying a lot of books and my real estate's doing really well and the vacancy rates are nothing. So what people do in good times is they then overspend and oversplurge, and then the economy changes and they lose all that, right? It's like the boom and bust cycle that happens. And so the real estate gurus who were, you know, huge back in 05 lost everything in 07 because they were buying jets and fancy houses in Hawaii. And I looked at that and I guess I'm self-aware enough to go, I don't want to be that guy again. And so I wasn't going to do it. And the guy who actually convinced me to do it was David Green, my co-host on the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Show. And he said, well, let's talk through this. You know, it's 3-unit property, right? What could you rent your house? If you had to come home and the economy changed and you had to just rent out your property, what could you rent the top unit for? What could you rent the bottom unit for? What could you rent the other unit for? And he walked me through that math and I realized, oh yeah, I'd actually break even, maybe make a little bit of money by owning this property in Hawaii. He's like, okay, so then ask yourself 30 years from now, 20 years from now, a house with an ocean view in Maui, is that going to be worth more or less than the 1.7 you're buying it for? Good point. I'm sure it's going to be worth a whole lot more. So you're telling me, Brandon, that worst case scenario, you have to rent out your property, make money every month in cash flow, go live somewhere else that you get to choose at that point, and then that property over the next 20 years gets paid off and is now worth $4 or $5 million. That's worst case scenario? And I'm like,
That's worse.
I'm like, Yeah, you're right. That is kind of worst case scenario, isn't it?
This is your biggest burr ever.
Yes, this is a giant burr house hack, everything combined in one. Multifamily, also kind of a single family. Yeah, it's every real estate strategy I've ever done all combined in one. And this property, I will make millions of dollars at if I hold it long enough. And so that's why I don't feel stupid for doing it at the greatest economy ever.
Awesome.
I didn't go buy a jet, so...
An amazing awesome. Splurge worth every last
penny. Every last penny.
Question number five. Ooh, we've never had a question number five
what?
Before.
And now I'm scared.
Tell us a secret. Tell us a Brandon Turner secret. Come on, something you've never told anybody ever.
Wow, a secret.
Oh, I'm not really going to make you do it.
No, okay. Here you go. No, I'm going to tell one. When I was, and this is going to torment people for life. Because now you're going to do it too. That's not much of a secret, but it's a funny story. When I was in sixth grade, I had a youth leader at a church tell me, do you ever wash the middle of your back? You can't reach it. So the middle of your back never gets washed. And I said, oh my gosh, you're right. I think about that every time I take a shower every day since sixth grade. And I say, how do I wash the middle of my back? And I think of that story every time. And now everybody listening to this is going to go, shoot, every time you take a story for the shower for the rest of your life, you're going to go, how am I washing the middle of my back?
That's like a Buddhist cone. What's the sound of one hand clapping?
There you go. Yeah. 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 You can't do it. You have a dirty middle back. Sorry, everybody.
Brandon, that's awesome. Okay. So now that was the five more. Or that was the five. Let's jump into the more. So for our listeners out there who want to find out more about Brandon Turner or find out where they can contact Brandon Turner, tell us more about where we can get in touch with you.
I'm like a 13-year-old girl. I'm obsessed with Instagram. So Instagram is Beardy Brandon, beard with a Y, Brandon. And of course, I'm on Bigger Pockets and I'm on everything else. But Instagram is where my inner 13-year-old child comes out.
Awesome. And for anybody else out there that didn't catch this earlier, if you want to buy the 90-day intention journal that yes. Bigger Pockets is just coming out with, I think
which you should.
It was, yeah. Say it again, was it Bigger Pockets?
Biggerpockets.com/journal. Yeah, biggerpockets.com/journal.
Easy enough. Cool.
Easy peasy.
Brandon, this was absolutely awesome. I'm sure our listeners appreciate it. Carol and I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being here today with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you, guys.
Talk to you soon. That was an awesome episode. I love Brandon, but I especially love all the cool things that Brandon is able to teach us. He has been, one of the reasons I love Brandon is because I've known him for probably going on 10 years now, and he is one of the most consistent executors. Is that the right word? He's one of the most consistent. Yeah, he's one of the most consistent executors I know. I mean, he's always doing stuff. He's always achieving more. He's always setting massive goals. And he does it at the same time that he's starting and raising and growing a family, living in Hawaii. It amazes me.
Yeah, he's really inspiring. And he's just so real and so transparent. And honestly, though, you got to be impressed. He sets these big, amazing goals that have a really long timeline, and then he crushes them in no time at all. So just love, love, love his energy. And I loved all his great tips. And again, the timing could not have been better for us, right? Around the visioning and really thinking about what it is that we want to do next. He gave us great tips on how to do that. So it was just phenomenal all the way around. Thank you, Brandon.
Absolutely. Okay. With that said, do we have anything left to add for this show?
Let's wrap it up, baby.
Okay, everybody, you have a wonderful week. She is Carol. I am Jay.
Now go live with intention today.
See you, everybody.
Good, huh? See you later. Bye.